Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind. And we are coming to you live from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. We started a very important discussion last week of a statement which Swami often repeats in his discourses, and as we confessed last time, a statement that we ourselves would have loved to think deep about and understand. And the satsang last week and the one we're going to continue this week is giving us the opportunity to do that, and we're grateful to Swami and to our listeners for giving us that opportunity. As I said, this is going to be a continuation of that discussion that we started last week, and more importantly, this week we're going to come to an aspect of the discussion which will connect a few points which will help us understand a very important aspect of Swami's message with regards to this statement. But before we proceed with that, I'll invite Arvind and I'll request him to give us a short summary of what we discussed last week before we continue with this week's session. Sairam, Arvind.
Sairam, Prem, and Sairam to all our listeners. As Prem had beautifully said last week we were on the verge of the beginning of Dasara, and now we are nearing the Vijayadashmi day. The Dasara is the time when we do a lot, whether it is in the Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga or the Jnana Yoga, and we are indeed blessed that we are able to discuss in Bhagwan's presence a beautiful statement that he would often make: the proper study of mankind is man. Last week we saw that this statement Swami actually borrows from a poem published by Alexander Pope in 1733. The poem has a name, An Essay on Man. It's a very long poem, and it is used in the context to say that man cannot understand God's purposes, and because man cannot understand God's purposes, he doesn't have the right to complain about his position in the entire creation. Since you don't understand the purpose, how can you feel something is good or bad? And therefore, man must accept that whatever is right. We then discussed how, in order to inculcate this feeling that whatever is right, one needs to have a much broader vision of optimism itself. Optimism usually is considered as something of a feeling or attitude wherein one believes that one's situation is going to improve from the current bad situation. But the philosophy of optimism states, that's why it's called optimism, it states that the present situation is optimal. It's perfect in every sense, so there is nothing like in due course of time it will improve. It is already perfect. And therefore, going by Swami's discourses and teachings, when the present moment is perfect, if we are not perceiving it as perfect, then there is some imperfection in our perception, not in the situation and scenario. And that is where we went into one of the expositions of Bhagwan on the meaning of the proper study of mankind is man, which is man must see himself and study himself, how he is an integrated system of organ systems, organs, cells, tissues, everything. And in the similar way, he should realize that he is part of this entire creation. And one must have that holistic vision. From a holistic vision point of view, every time the present moment is perfect, though individual parts of the system may seem to be suffering. So we went into great detail of that exposition. And then, in order to get that kind of a Vishala Bhavam, we discussed how we need to correct our vision. Vision doesn't mean just the physical sight. It means the way we perceive, the way we accept, the way we drink in information about the environment and situation that we are in. For that, we had multiple examples of how Duryodhana, because he was inherently bad, he felt that everything around him is bad. And Yudhishthira, because he was inherently good, he saw everything around him as good. So we saw multiple Chinnakathas, multiple stories, we discussed about this. And we also possibly digressed a little bit into a discussion on why sometimes things don't appear as perfect as they can possibly be. You know, intellectually we feel that a natural system can be more perfect. And we discovered how, in his wisdom, God has created a world where harmony is given precedence over efficiency. If something is highly efficient but causing disharmony, God will not prefer it. He will prefer a little bit of inefficiency if it is going to bring in harmony. And once we understand this basic principle, we realize that our bodies themselves, you know, the human bodies are not 100% efficient. They have their own inefficiencies. But every part of the body works harmoniously so that life can go on. And that is a message we get about living in the world as well. Because whether we try profit maximization or trying to get the maximum benefit out of natural resources, we should remember that when we do any of our activities, it's not about maximum efficiency, but maximum harmony. And that is why the proper study of mankind is man. Well, before I conclude my summary, I will reiterate one little, rule of the thumb that we ourselves proposed in order to properly understand this poetic statement. It's not a prosaic statement, because prosaically it means to understand man, you should properly study the history of man. The proper study of mankind is man. But poetically, what it actually means is the proper study for mankind is man. Meaning, the only thing worth indulging in, studying and understanding is man should try to understand man, which means man should try to understand himself. When man understands himself, everything will stand revealed. So, this was what we had discussed in the week gone by, and I'm sure that with Bhagwan's grace, blessings and love, we will continue this week also to gather some more precious insights about this statement, the proper study of mankind is man.
Just adding to whatever you said, a couple of things, especially going back to the poem, you know, one of the things about optimism itself, there was a, at the time when Alexander Pope gave his idea of optimism, actually, I mean, I was just reading a little bit about that, where they say, there were a lot of people who did not agree with the idea, because if you say that whatever is perfect, there is this idea of justifying whatever is happening in the world. You know, whatever wrong is happening, whatever evil is happening, it's a way of justifying it, and it's a way of weakness by which you accept what you cannot change. So a lot of people did not agree with the idea of optimism in that sense. And that is why Alexander Pope's, I mean, the larger work, not the piece which we read yesterday, what we read last week, it is a part of the poem which he had written. As we said, it's a larger book. There actually he says, the moment you say everything is optimal, everything is perfect as it is, but we have to grow in understanding to see that perfection. The moment you say that, it becomes like when you're looking outside, what Swami says, what you see outside is a chance to correct what is inside. So that was seen as, yes, this was the missing link in the idea of optimism, which the other scholars were speaking about. And that's one of the reasons why Alexander Pope's exposition was spoken of as very perfect in that sense. And as we said, it's so much like what Swami says, that it is an opportunity to correct yourself inside. And of course, as we said, one of the other historical contexts in which this was spoken is about man's scientific explorations, where man was seeing himself as an individual who can exploit what is around to benefit himself. And the moment you see yourself as a part of the whole, the way you look at the resources outside changes. The way you lead your life becomes, harmony becomes a very important term that you have to keep in mind when you're thinking of what you're supposed to do with your life and the resources which are around you. That you have to benefit yourself. It's not that you should not benefit, but at the same time, you have to understand that you're part of the whole. So one of the most important one-word summaries for this proper study of mankind you can think of is the word harmony. And that harmony can be spoken of in different contexts or different levels. And that is what we're going to do. One of the levels we spoke of is the harmony with the outside nature. And all of what we speak of in the case, in the name of environmentalism, in the name of going green, all of that is that man has suddenly realized that he cannot endlessly exploit nature. As somebody very beautifully said, if somebody thinks that you can get infinite profit from a finite substance, you must either be mad or you should be an economist. Because we were so money-minded in that sense for many, many centuries that we have brought us down to this level where we have woken up with a rude shock by saying that, you know, that we have all these hypotheses like the Gaia hypothesis, where man is seen as one of the organs as of a larger organism. That is one of the ways of looking at it. All of this idea of harmony comes, as Swami says, when you realize that you are an individual, and the individual which has the infinity in it that you never forget, but you're part of a whole. The whole is also infinite, the part is also infinite.
The beautiful thing is when we get this understanding, we will start participating in this harmony and we will become willing participants in this harmony. Because whether we like it or not, we need harmony for our own survival now. When we do this with understanding, we will be doing it from source, as Swami would say, not by force. And when we do anything from the source, that is on our own volition, with all our interest, passion and enthusiasm, it is much more enjoyable. The whole process becomes more enjoyable rather than doing it because I have no other option and I have to do it. So that is where understanding this becomes so important, because understanding it will make the entire process enjoyable rather than a kind of a self-inflicted torture. Now, as we hinted last week, when we say the proper study of man, when we have to study man, one way we studied was to see the harmony that exists between the cells, tissues, organs, organ systems, and the entire body, the limbs, etc. But then, it is not just physical aspects that make man. Man is the physical aspects and much more. And therefore, when we say harmony in man, if you want to bring about harmony in the world, we have to study harmony in man. When we say in that manner, the harmony in man that we study should not be limited just to the physical harmony that exists between, as I said, the cells, organs, organ system, tissues, etc. We also have to study the other harmony. And that is one more context in which we hear Swami speaking about the proper study of mankind as man in multiple occasions, where he speaks about the harmony that should exist between the thought, word and deed.
You know, there is one concept which Swami speaks about, which is very important when you talk about unity of thought, word and deed. When you learn something, when you acquire a knowledge, Swami would say just knowing it does not complete the knowledge in that sense. And Swami would give it as a three-step process. I think in one of the Samukos discourses, Swami has extensively spoken about that. Swami would say, Nyatum, Drashtum and Praveshtum. And very interesting, where Swami says, Nyatum is only the first aspect or the first step in the whole process where you come to know. But knowing does not make that knowledge yours. Swami says, once you know it, you have to try it out. That is, drashtum. You try it out and see, literally in that sense. You apply it in your life and see whether it works. And when the third step of praveshtum is when it becomes a part of your system itself. And Swami would say something as simple as, you know, it might sound complex, but Swami would say that, you know, in your childhood, invariably everybody must have in some form had a misadventure with fire and they would have burned their finger. And that knowledge that fire burns becomes so integral in your thinking that even 80 years later when you see fire, you will not go and touch it. So Swami says you have learnt it and you have, there's an experiential knowledge in that, and then it becomes a part of your thinking. So Swami says of all the things that you learn, of all the things that you read in a book, only that can be called knowledge, that which has become a part of your practice. So Swami says that knowing alone is not enough. You know, and that's what they say. If you go to the, if you're caught up in some legal case and say, no, I know the law, but I couldn't follow it. Or if you say that I didn't know the law at all, you're not going to be excused of that. You Correct. Should know it, you should practice it, and you should be caught practicing it, if you could put it that way. And that is what is that unity of thought, word and deed. Because, you know, you can talk of harmony, you can talk of, I've studied man and I've studied man's role in mankind and mankind's role in creation. But that harmony should result in what you, how you lead your life in everyday life. And that is why I think that unity of thought, word and deed, which Swami speaks about, comes.
I'm reminded of an incident narrated by Dr. M. Sainath, who was a lecturer in physics at the Sri Satya Institute of High Learning. He was saying how they had this discussion once on whether Swami actually reads through all the letters that he receives, because, of course, not that they had any doubts about divinity. They felt that because he's divine, there's no need for him to read. So he need not read or anything like that. They had this entire discussion and they were there were people speaking everything. When he actually got a chance to stand near the door, when Swami was sitting with the letters, and Swami was just leafing through the letters, he would pick one or two and read them, but it seemed very random. Many letters would go straight into the dustbin. And Sainath sir standing there was thinking that, yeah, see, I was right. I'll go back and tell them. It's not as if Swami is reading every letter.
Mm-hmm.
And even as he was doing this, Swami suddenly looked at him and called him. And he said, anything? And so he said, no, Swami, nothing. He said, no, tell me. If there's anything, let me know. He said, no, Swami, there is nothing. You know, though it is a very acceptable kind of reaction. You know, when I'm thinking something, suddenly somebody asks, what are you thinking? A penny for your thoughts. My first response will be, yeah, nothing. It's nothing. You know, because these were meant to be my private thoughts. It's nothing to concern you. That is the attitude. You know, with that he said, but if we actually look at it deeply and critically, it is indeed a violation of harmony of thought, word and deed. Because you are thinking something, but you're telling something else. And Swami actually pointed out to him. Swami said, hey, there is something, remember, never hide anything from your guru. It's a sin. You know? At that point in time, Sainath sir, he said that I just opened up and I told Swami, Swami, what you are doing right now, you know, you are not reading any letters. You are not reading many of the letters. So, it doesn't matter actually whether, you know, it is written to you or not. At that point in time, Swami said, here, pick any letter. So, Sainath sir picked the letter. Swami said, go there, stand at the door. Now, open and read it. Mm-hmm. He said, no, Swami, this is a letter meant for you. And Swami said, that is why I am telling. I am only telling you. Open it and read it. And Sainath sir opened the letter and Swami mentioned the name of a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
A person, I think by name Chatterjee or Banerjee, I am confused. He was a Bengali gentleman. Swami said, it is Chatterjee or Banerjee.
Okay.
Right? And the doctors had said nothing can happen, but then he had come to Swami and Swami's vibhuti has been taken and now his child has been cured and now he is grateful to Swami, he is expressing his gratitude. Right? That's what he's writing, correct? And now Sainath sir was bowled over because that was precisely the content of the unopened letter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to Swami's lotus feet, he sat there and he said, Swami, why should we write, do we need to write letters to you, Swami? Why do we need to write? You know everything. That is when, you know, Swami revealed to him that, see, you are not writing a letter for Bhagwan's benefit. We should remember that we don't write letters so that Swami gets information. Swami said, it is for your own benefit. And that is when Swami explained this concept of unity in thought, word and deed. When you actually write a letter, that is a moment when there is a harmony of thought, word and deed. You are thinking something. Those thoughts, you're putting it into words and you're actually following it up with the deed, which is writing down those words. So therefore, the prayer becomes complete, you know. So it is for our own benefit that, I mean, Swami explained to Sainath sir that the letters are written for his own benefit. And this entire explanation, I don't know how much of it Swami directly told, and I think Swami partially told and partial were Sainath sir's thoughts. But this was the feeling that when we write a letter to Swami, it is not for Swami to understand it. It is for our own benefit. And how do we get the benefit? Because it is a form of prayer in which there is harmony of thought, word and deed. No wonder that even till the last few years, last few months and weeks, Swami continued to accept letters from devotees. I mean, I feel that in itself, if we look at it, is a testimony to the powerful fact that Swami is so much for this harmony of thought, word and deed. Because letter writing is a form of prayer which brings in harmony of thought, word and deed, Swami is supporting it so much so that even when physically he is in the car, I mean physically he is not able to walk, he is restricted to a wheelchair in the car, yet till the last days he continued to accept letters. I think there can be no more powerful example than this to show the importance of the harmony of thought, word and deed.
Yeah, absolutely. And many, many times, you know, in different occasions, Swami would refer to this harmony of thought, word and deed. I'm reminded of the anecdote which Swami would often narrate of the devotee Dhruva, who does penance, and then finally Lord Vishnu comes and blesses him.
Hmm.
The beauty of Swami narrating any Chinnakatha is, you know, Swami would bring multiple angles to that one Chinnakatha. As once Sanjay Sani sir, a former principal, and lecturer, he was telling us once, you know, that one of the students was telling him, in Trayi Swami began a Chinnakatha. And, you know, once you've been in the system for about 3 or 4 years, you can kind of, you would know most of the Chinnakathas which Swami would narrate, depending on that circumstance in that discourse, what topic Swami is talking about. Swami started one particular Chinnakatha, and the moment Swami started it, you know, this boy was thinking in his mind, Swami, I know this one, so I can relax, you know, I know this, I don't have to pay attention, almost in that sense. But you're saying that same Chinnakatha which he has heard so many times, Swami ended it with a completely different message altogether. And, you know, that's the beauty of Swami's Chinnakathas. And coming back to this Chinnakatha, we all know the story where Dhruva is refused a place in his father's lap, and then his stepmother comes and tells him, you do penance and get the boon to be born as my child, so that only then you'll get the chance to, you know, be a favorite son of your father. So this boy goes and he does penance and all of that. And the beauty is, he's a 5-year-old kid and he does penance for a few months. So by the time Lord Vishnu comes in front of him, he realizes that what he is asking for is so trivial. So he refuses to ask for, after all, a place
on his father's lap.
In the family and all of that. So he refuses to ask. But by the time when Lord Vishnu comes, you know, he tells Lord Vishnu that, I don't need to ask you anything because I've realized that you're the omniscient one. And I came here thinking that I have to please you and ask you something, but now I know that you're all knowing and what I've come to ask is so trivial, so I don't feel like asking. So Lord Vishnu tells him, and Swami would say, that see, you thought of asking for something, and having thought of it, you decided to work on it or to act upon it, and you've done the penance. And I have come in front of you and I'm giving you this opportunity to even speak out what you thought of and what you acted upon. And why am I giving you this opportunity? Because when there is unity of thought, word and deed, you become a Mahatma. I am giving you this opportunity to become a Mahatma. Don't lose this opportunity.
Manas ekam, vachas ekam, karmanyekam, mahatmanam.
Right. So see, so Vishnu, you know, tells him that you express in words what you prayed for. And then, of course, the grace is such that he is given that and he is given much, much more. Because he has realized that what he has come to ask is so trivial.
At this point in time, dear listeners, we will take a quick little break. On the other side of the break, we will continue with our discussion.
Papiha, pyaasa kund ka, jaise papiha, pyaasa kund ka, jaise papiha.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were discussing the Trikarna Shuddhi, where Swami says, Manas Ekam, Vachas Ekam, Karmanyekam, Mahatmanam. The other part is, Manas Anyat, Vachas Anyat, Karman Anyat, Duratmanam. Which means, if your thoughts lie somewhere, your words speak something else, and your actions are completely something else, that is the defining quality of a Duratmanam, or a bad person. That's how Swami defines a good person and a bad person. Now, because of English being incapable of perfectly translating the Sanskrit terms, Trikarna Shuddhi is often referred to as unity of thought, word and deed. But the word Shuddhi, apart from denoting unity, it also denotes purity. And therefore, I feel when we translate it in our mind for our understanding, it should also be unity and purity of thought, word and deed. I remember on one occasion while speaking on the Trikarna Shuddhi, there was a doubt which cropped up among the listeners, which was, if I think of killing a person, if I speak about killing a person and then I go and kill a person, do I become great because there's unity of thought, word and deed? It was actually that question that triggered a proper understanding of Trikarna Shuddhi, because Shuddhi means purity also. So not only should there be unity in the thought, word and deed, the thought should be a pure thought. When it's a pure thought, as Swami says, a pure thought from a pure heart is better than a mantra. That is what Swami says. If it's a pure thought, then we should speak about it and work on it and act upon it. Otherwise, you know, during an interview that Swami had given my father during his teenage years, he opened up to Swami and he said, Swami, I get a lot of bad thoughts. I don't know what to do. Then Swami told him with so much love and compassion, he said, little one, you see, Swami called him a little one in Kannada. Swami said, have you seen a river? He said, yes, Swami, I see a river. Many times there are so many dirty things floating in the river. He said, yes, Swami, there's plastic, there's garbage, there's filth. When you see such thing, don't hold on to that filth. Just allow it to flow. In the flow, it'll go off and it'll not bother you anymore. Just momentary botheration it'll be. And then Swami said, like that only in your mind, in the flow of your mind, sometimes dirty thoughts come, bad thoughts come. Don't hold on to those thoughts, just let them flow by and they'll be gone. Many times we realize that by holding on to these thoughts is when we start suffering because of that. There is that famous story of two monks who had to cross the river, and there was that girl who sought their help. And one of the monks carries the girl across. The other monk is actually mortified and shocked. We have taken a vow of celibacy, and how can you carry a girl on your back like this? And it keeps bothering him, and once they reach the hermitage, he's unable to bear it, and he tells their master that, master, you know what? This other monk, my fellow monk, what he did, he carried a girl. And the master tells that he carried the girl and left her on the other side of the river. Why are you still carrying her? So, means, you know, this is such a beautiful thing that shows that what are the thoughts we keep thinking about, that is what defines who we are. Therefore, it is not as if a person whom we consider as pure and noble has never had bad thoughts. It's just a wonderful trait that he has, wherein he is not holding on to those thoughts and allowing them to flow by. Just yesterday, I saw an inspirational quote which said, Everything you think is habit forming. Therefore, be careful what you think repeatedly. You know? We say that these are habit forming substances, be careful about them. He was saying thinking is habit forming. So be careful of whatever you think. Just don't think of what is bad. That's all. So simple. And that was what Swami told my father that time, that don't feel bad that you're getting bad thoughts. Just don't hold on to them. So therefore, when we say unity of thought, word and deed, it means that we use our discrimination to hold on to only those thoughts which are noble and good. Therefore, it is unity and purity of thought, word and deed. Hold on to those thoughts and then hold on to such good thoughts so firmly that they express themselves in our words and also in our deeds. Then we become Mahatmanam. That is the complete meaning of Manas Ekam, Vachas Ekam, Karman Ekam, Mahatmanam, the Trikarna Shuddhi.
The two confusions, as you said, the confusion arises because of two things, I feel. One is, you know, when you say unity of thought, word and deed, it doesn't mean the expression of every thought in word and deed. You know, when people say that, oh, I speak whatever comes to my mind, that's definitely not a sign of nobility, right? But the moment, let's say I get angry with somebody on the road and I want to give a mouthful, but I stop myself and say, no, that's not the right thing. I don't know the full picture. I don't know. I mean, he might be having a bad day. Suppose you have a traffic collision with somebody. You might think that, oh, he might be in a hurry or he must be some problem in his house or something like that. See, that also is a thought. So when I say unity of thought, word and deed, now my thought is an angry thought and the thought which filters that angry thought into something more sensible, right? So when I say unity of thought, word and deed, I'm not expressing every thought, but a conglomeration of thoughts, and I decide what needs to be expressed.
Okay? In other words, when we say words, I think words also encapsulate, words are just a, when you say the term words, the words stand for expression.
Right.
And when I say expression, it need not be just vocal. Silence is also an expression.
Right.
In fact, many times Swami says silence is the best answer to many situations. And that's why Swami says, have a fourfold filter. Before you speak, think whether it is true. Think whether it is pleasant. Is it hurting someone or not? Then think whether it will improve upon the silence. I mean, instead of doing this, is it not better to just keep silent? Think whether it is true. Think whether it will benefit someone. Think whether it will harm someone. And think whether it is going to be an improvement over silence. If all these criteria are fulfilled, then alone speak. So therefore, as you rightly pointed out, when we say we think something and we express the same thing, when I say expression, expression need not be just words. Words are one form of expression. I mean speaking. Vocalizing it or writing it is one form of expression. I can also express it through silence.
Right. And when you say thought, the idea is, you know, see, I'm not every bad thought which comes to me. I'm not every good thought that comes to me. I'm actually a mix of both of that.
Hmm.
Right. So when I have a bad thought or when I have an angry thought or an expression of jealousy or something like that, when I counter it with a thought by saying that, no, this is not the right thing. Swami does not expect me. So I become a mix of those two. I am not just one. So when you say a unity of thought, word and deed, that filter also becomes a part of your thought. The filter also becomes a part of the expression. The filter also becomes a part of your action. Right?
Mm.
So that is why a person who is more stable, a person who is more controlled, that control expresses in thought, word and deed. Right? And it's easier to express the control in thought, word and in word and deed, because thought sometimes is more spontaneous. As Swami said, it comes with the flow. You really cannot do anything. But where you have more control, you control it more, right? That is one way of looking at it. The other thing is, you know, I often think like this, you know, when you have a car, one of the things that you do when you take it for servicing is, I don't know whether the modern cars have that. Earlier, they used to do that. You know, there is that alignment between the steering and the wheels, right? Sometimes the wheels do not exactly do what you try to do with your steering. And that's one of the things when you take it for servicing.
Wheel alignment.
Too, right? So the idea is actually, when you make the steering and the wheel perfect, there is perfect harmony between the two.
Hmm.
Right? So when each one is functioning what it's supposed to be doing, there is automatically harmony between what one does and the other. So in that sense, when you're automatically thinking what you're supposed to do, that's what Swami refers to as Shuddhi. When the thoughts are supposed to be what it's supposed to be, then it'll automatically express in words and deeds. So when you're, the unity and purity is actually go hand in hand. You know, when you take care of unity, I'm sorry, when you take care of purity, automatically there'll be unity of thought, word and deed. And when there is no unity of thought, word and deed, which means you have to work on the purity aspect of it.
Beautifully put. Let us just sum up this whole thing of the harmony of thought, word and deed from a discourse quote. That Swami discourse that Swami delivered on the 17th of October 2003 during Dasara of this kind itself. Swami is saying, what is the hallmark of a true student? Manasyekam vachasyekam karmanyekam mahatmanam. Those whose thoughts, words and deeds are in perfect harmony are the noble ones. That is what Swami is saying as the hallmark of a true student. Swami continues, it is said the proper study of mankind is man. But today, we do not find true qualities of mankind. People may show respect towards each other outwardly, but they do not experience true love, unity and happiness inwardly. They say that they belong to mankind, but in reality, they have a monkey mind. What is true humanness? You should treat your fellow men as your own brothers. You deserve to be called a human being only when you cultivate the spirit of unity. Where there is no unity, there you will find enmity and hatred. Consequently, the principle of love is lost altogether. Man's foremost duty is to share his love with others. Only then can he realize the dictum of the brotherhood of man and the fatherhood of God.
Right, and this actually brings us to the other aspect. You know, I mean, clearly shows how the unity of thought, word, and deed is in line with that idea of proper study of mankind, which we spoke of. You know, from saying that I am separate from the environment around and I utilize it for my benefit, we were talking of how man has to look at himself as an harmonious part of the entire creation. Now, looking at it from the point of view of man and mankind, his relationship with the people around, Swami is saying you have to look at it also with the same idea of harmony. And this again is one thing which Swami would often say, and I think Professor Venkatraman sir would also quote this very often, especially when he speaks about the proper study of mankind is man, where he would say that when you're walking on the road and let's say you run a thorn, you instantly you let out a squeal or your eyes start tearing up, and then he says instantly your hand goes up and picks up the thorn. That's what Swami would say. The hand does not say that why should I respond to the hurt which the leg or the feet is facing, or the eyes do not see that I do not have, why should I cry, nothing fell on me. It was after all the feet. So Swami would say that this harmony which is there in the body is what should be felt in mankind itself. When somebody is in pain, that you should instantly feel that empathy towards that person. And it is not like saying that, oh, let me go and serve that person, or, you know, I'm a very service-minded person, I'll go and serve. It is so natural that the moment you see somebody in pain, Swami says you should rush to help that person. And when it is done with that attitude, you'll not feel, there will be no sense of ego or condescendence in that sense, where you say that, oh, I've helped somebody, or I'm superior that I've gone and helped somebody.
There's this Chinnakatha that Swami narrates of a wandering sage who sees a calf stuck in the slush. And there are some children who are actually standing and enjoying the state that the calf is in. At that point in time, this saintly person dives right into the slush, picks up the calf and actually carries it out and helps it. That is when the children are shamefaced and all the others also gather around this person and say, you are really a great person. You went and helped the calf. And Swami says that the saint replies that, I did not help the calf at all. I only helped myself. And then he clarifies and explains. He says that when I saw the calf struggling in the slush there was intense pain within my heart. Whatever I did in order to relieve myself of the pain. That's all. And Swami says that is how service or seva must be done. When you see pain and suffering around, when we have this vishala bhava, this broad feeling that we are all one, that I am just part of this whole, just like automatically the eyes get tears, automatically the mouth lets out a wail, automatically and spontaneously the hand goes and pulls the thorn out of the leg, in the same manner we automatically rush spontaneously to help. And that's because I feel that I am in pain, I have to relieve myself of the pain. That is, I'm sure that is what the eye, the mouth, the hand also feel. They feel that I am in pain, I need to relieve myself of this pain. They don't think that the leg is in pain, I need to relieve the leg's pain. In the same way, when we serve somebody who is in pain or who is suffering, I do so because I am pained and I want to relieve the pain. This feeling of oneness grows. And this feeling of oneness is essential for service. In fact, that is why Swami would encourage everyone to do seva. Because it's a two-way, it's like what do I say, it works both ways. The corollary also happens. When we keep doing seva, we automatically grow in the vishala bhavam. So either I have this broad-mindedness and this vishala bhavam because of which spontaneously and naturally I do seva. Otherwise, I tell myself that seva is good for me, seva makes Swami happy, you know, tell any excuse, tell any reason. We have this bhajan which says, Dina dukhiyon se prem karo, mera sai prasann hoga. Which means, go and share your love with those who are suffering, the forlorn, the dejected, because that will make Swami happy. Find whatever reason to go and do seva. Automatically that vishala bhavam or broad-mindedness gets developed. I remember when we had a person come and demonstrate handwriting analysis.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying that by seeing our handwriting, he can tell what are our characteristics and traits, and though it was not 100% accurate, it was quite interesting and revealing, the things that he said. But what has remained stuck in my mind is, he said there's something called handwriting therapy.
Mm-hmm.
He said that if there are some characteristics and traits that you want to develop within yourself, you can do that by changing your handwriting. You know, change your handwriting and keep doing that. You will see that those traits that that handwriting stands for will get embedded in you in course of time. It's the same way with seva also. Seva is actually something that happens spontaneously when I have this vishala bhavam, this feeling of oneness, this feeling that I am part of the whole. But in case I don't have it, I can do seva, and in course of time this feeling will get developed. I feel that is the reason Swami encouraged and enthused us to do seva. And he would give different incentives to do seva. Because he would, you know, possibly give padnamskar to all the sevadal who would come to Prashanthi Nilayam. He would give vibhuti packets. He would, in fact, there's this famous story of a sevadal who jumped into a drain in order to clean it because it was clogging, and Swami created a ring for him and he said he's not going to have any more births. Different rewards Swami kept giving so that people get enthused to do seva. In fact, later on, even stating it, even when Swami would just state in the discourse that Swami will feel very happy if you do seva, that itself, those words were enough to ring in our ears and hearts to enthuse us to do the seva, be it gram seva or whatever. Gram seva is Ram seva, Jana seva is Janardana seva, Nara seva is Narayana seva, all these quotes. I feel it's all because Swami wanted to tell us that some way start doing this. And as you start doing it, you'll automatically develop this vishala bhavam and you will reach a state where you don't need any incentive to do seva because seva becomes your swabhava. So that is another, as you rightly said, that is another way this statement that proper study of mankind is man can be interpreted, that we need to have this feeling vishala bhavam, this feeling of oneness, just like the different parts of the body feel oneness with each other.
Talking about harmony and this concept of proper study of mankind is man, I'm reminded of, I think in the year 2001, when there was this earthquake in Gujarat, Swami had sent a huge convoy of relief material. And at the end of it, when Swami was speaking in a discourse, Swami spoke about why such natural calamities happen. And Swami said, it's precisely because man does not look at himself as part of creation. And he said he exploits nature, and he feels that the rest of nature is there to fulfill his needs and desires. And because of that, Swami was saying that there's extensive drilling that is happening and mining which is happening, which is causing an imbalance in nature. And that is why you have these volcanoes and earthquakes and these kind of weather patterns changing and things like that. So when Swami spoke about that, Swami said, see, when you disturb this very delicate balance, which is in nature, then nature then looks for a new equilibrium, right? That's what we see even in chemistry. When you change the equilibrium of a system, the system tries to look for a different equilibrium and
rebalance
itself. And Swami said, all of the natural calamities is because of that. You know, you might look at it as fury of nature, but it's not fury of nature. It's just the nature
rebalancing
itself. So Swami then went on to say that, you know, some devotees came and asked me, Swami, why do you have to send relief material? Why can't you stop these things from happening altogether? And because after all, you're the one who's the master of this creation. Why can't you prevent natural calamities at all? Swami said, no, that's not the way it happens. See, I've created the balance. So the balance will take care of itself. The optimization will happen in the system. It's inbuilt into the system. So then Swami said, see, that is the law of nature. But now what is happening, the relief material going, people going and doing seva, sevadal working there. Swami said, this is the love of man. So actually Swami was saying that this is also part of nature. This is also a part of that optimization which is built into the system. If you look at it, you know, today we are talking so much about seva as, you know, our organization is doing. But as recently as a few months ago when there was that floods in Kerala, I mean, there was a spontaneous outburst from everybody. It's not that only Swami's devotees went there or only devotees went there. Even atheists and others would have gone there.
Hmm.
Because it's inbuilt into a person to look at somebody in pain and saying that I can do something, I should go and do something. Right? I should make myself available to, in some way, bring back a new equilibrium in that situation. So Swami is saying that that is also inbuilt into the system. So law of nature is also there. Love of man is also part of that harmony which you're talking about.
Interestingly, during the floods, I came across this discourse. It's a Shivaratri discourse in the year 2001, where Swami is saying that people ask me why you couldn't stop the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
And during the course of the discussion, one of the brothers, he narrated an incident that he had heard. You know, he said that Swami was asked this question by somebody who ranked quite high in the police force, you know, of the state of Karnataka in India. And then Swami immediately asked him, and Swami said, what is your position? And he said, whatever, I don't know, IGP, DGP, I don't know the position, but it was a very high-ranked person in the police. And Swami said, does that mean that all the law and order of that city comes under you? He said, yes, Swami. He said, even traffic signal, everything. He said, yes, Swami. Swami said, so when you are driving your car, do you follow traffic signals or not? He said, Swami, I follow it, Swami. Do you need to follow? If you skip a red light, what will happen? So, I mean, nothing will happen, actually, because I am in charge. And if there is a need, I will skip, Swami, but I don't usually. Means I'll always stick by the rules. Swami said, God is also like that. He, if necessary, he can skip the rules. He can. But the rules themselves have been designed to keep the system in equilibrium and to keep it functioning, right? So, unless there's an exceptional need, God will not break the own rules that he has set. That is how it is, and that is how Swami made it clear, and I felt it was a very beautiful analogy. You may have the power to override, you may have the power to do whatever, but as someone beautifully said, when you truly have power, you don't feel the need to express it. When you feel the need to keep expressing your power, it means you're insecure about your power. And it's such a beautiful statement when we look at people surrounding us, be it at home or at office or on the road, anywhere, where we see people having the need to express their power in order to show off that they are powerful, they are actually not powerful. Because absolute power has no need to show. And you know, I have seen this many times with Swami. Whether, you know, that huge miracles, you know, once he, because this is the Dasara and the Vijayadashmi season, I came across a footage, Brother Sai Prakash was showing me. And which year, I don't remember, an old Yagna footage. And the Purnahuti time, the bundle is brought to Swami. And Swami quickly waved his hand, created something, I don't know, diamond or whatever. Just put it in the bundle and it was put into the flame there. And all the priests around, all these pujaris and the Vedic Ritviks, nobody noticed it except one person. And that one person's eyes, you know, grew big and his mouth opened in a gaping thing, and I think whatever he was chanting froze there because it went off into all like that. He was amazed and thrilled, but that was about it. Nobody else even noticed. And Brother Sai Prakash and myself, when we were seeing this footage, we thought, no, why would you want to do that? You know, you're doing something phenomenal. Why don't you just wait for all the cameras to come on you? You know, everybody, focus everybody's attention until now I'm going to create the diamond that is going to be put into the Yagna Kunda. Because Swami didn't feel the need to express that power, you know. He would just do his miracles without announcing. I remember when we were going through Swami's childhood also, we saw how he simply walked across the water, Bukkapatnam Lake, you know, possibly two or three people observed this miracle. Why would you do it in such a manner? Because you are truly powerful, you have no need to exhibit your power. When you have the need to exhibit the power, you have the need that others recognize that you are powerful and applaud you for it. That is when you will call a million people and tell, watch out now. Today at 10 o'clock, I'm going to walk on water. But when you are truly powerful, you just walk across water. Because honestly, Prem, I don't make a big fuss about me speaking a word. Because I feel speaking a word is nothing, it's not something like a great power. And whenever I want, I can speak a word. So that's why Swami would say, my miracles are ascharyam for you, but they are sahajam for me. They are natural. I don't make a big fuss about breathing. I don't make a big fuss about hearing or seeing, because I naturally do it. That is how it is done. And though I know that I have taken a little detour, I just felt it is so relevant to state this, that we have been blessed to come in contact with such a mighty power. A power that, you know, doesn't feel the need to show its power. It is so powerful, and it is from that power that we have received this message, the explanation, the extrapolation, the in-depth meaning of the statement, the proper study of mankind is man. How blessed are we? It is, we definitely need to pull out some time every day just to contemplate on being blessed enough to know Swami and recognize Swami.
It, you know, from whatever we've discussed so far, I think this statement, the proper study of mankind as man, is actually, you can easily connect it to two very important aspects of Swami's message. One, in the larger sense, when you see that as mankind, as an entity of mankind, in correlation with the entire universe, you're just a part of the whole. I think the ceiling on desires, which Swami speaks about, comes into play when you're thinking of that aspect of proper study of mankind. And the other aspect, when you see man and mankind in that relationship, the idea of service comes into picture. So those two important aspects of Swami's message are connected to this one statement that Swami would often quote. Probably we'll just read out another quote where Swami speaks about service and how proper study of mankind is an expression of that aspect of Swami's message. I think this was a discourse that Swami gave in 2001, June 10th, in the General Hospital in Whitefield. Swami says, "You should render service with a spirit of sacrifice. Sacrifice is the only way to immortality. Service is superior to rituals like yajnas and yagas. Inquire for whose sake you are performing yajnas and yagas. You are doing them for your own sake, not for the sake of God. God does not need them. You may say that you are performing yajnas for the welfare of the world, but in fact, you are doing it for your own welfare. It is God alone who looks after the welfare of the world. Sarvata panipatam, sarvata
sarvatokshi shiromukam,
sarvat shrutiman loke,
sarvamavrutyatishtati.
With hands, feet, eyes, heads, mouth and ears pervading everything, he permeates the entire universe. He alone can confer physical, mental and spiritual strength. He alone is a true human being who has the purity of thought, word and deed. Hence, it is said, the proper study of mankind is man. The doctors of this hospital are rendering service with such purity and broad feelings." I think so many aspects Swami is touching upon in this. One is, of course, Swami is speaking about yajnas and yagas, how that and spirit, service that is rendered is actually comparable in that nature. Because the idea that you're serving others to serve yourself is an acknowledgement of the fact that you cannot be happy without others around you being happy, or you cannot serve yourself without serving the people around you. And that is one aspect that Swami is speaking. And when you're any form of worship, any form of sacrifice, yajnas and yagas or worship, Swami would say that, I think in one of the Krishna Janmashtami discourses, Swami says that, what is the point in going on worshipping Rama and Krishna if not even one quality of that aspect of divinity does not enter you? Hmm. And here Swami is saying that one of the characteristics of divinity is unity of thought, word and deed, purity of thought, word and deed. So that worship should become, should install that quality in you, and that can be seen in the form of service that you render to others.
When you say that one cannot be happy when others around are unhappy, this kind of wisdom, you know, is actually there, present in everyone. As you say, even atheists came to help and serve the people when they were struck in Kerala, because this is how it is built. And not just Kerala, wherever there is any natural calamity, disasters, there are people who rush in from all kinds of, you know, all kinds of attitudes and mindsets with the single sole goal of trying to help others. So too, you know, we realize that we cannot have an island of prosperity amidst an ocean of desperation and deprivation. That is why even if we look at the world today, or most of the people who become ultra rich, ultra powerful, they finally spend their entire remaining life in philanthropy, because they feel nothing else worthwhile to do other than that with their money. You know, when you get a little money, You start investing, you want to grow it into more money. The more money you want to grow it into, even more money. The same thing happens with power. When you get little power, you want to become more powerful. With more powerful, you want to become even more powerful. Usually, when anybody reaches the zenith of either wealth or power or influence, we find them turning towards philanthropy in order to find fulfillment. Finally, this is what brings fulfillment, because whether we approach it from a philanthropic angle or a scientific angle or a spiritual angle, it is only when we are able to see this oneness, it is only when we are able to have this Vishala Bhavam, that we will find true fulfillment. True fulfillment doesn't depend on how much money I have. It doesn't depend on how much power I have. It doesn't depend on how much influence I have. Therefore, the paths may be many, but finally the goal is only one. As a spiritual aspirant in the Sri Satsai organizations, we might be trying to reach that feeling of oneness through our seva activities. But as I said, when a person is trying to earn a lot of money also, whether you take Bill Gates or Warren Buffett, I mean, take the richest people in the world, finally they turn to philanthropy only. And it almost feels like you want to ask them that you did this through your entire life in order to do this. And Swami is telling us that you need not wait to earn all that money, earn all that power in order to do seva. You can start actually your true progress towards the ultimate goal now itself, because indulge in seva. And that is the benefit we get when we have Swami with us, because we get our priorities sorted automatically. When you say that your well-being depends on the well-being of others around, that's what Swami said here. I'm reminded of a story that I read of a farmer who always won the prize for the best corn field in that region, you know. Every time he would win that. But amazingly, he was such a large-hearted and generous farmer that at the end of the competition, he would always take his best corn and distribute those seeds to all his neighboring farmers. And people would say, how large-hearted you are, don't you know that it is possible that the neighboring farmers may actually win the prize next year because you are giving them the high quality seeds. And that is when he said that I would love to have the best crop always. And therefore, I do this. Whether I win the prize or not doesn't matter. What matters is I get the best crop. And the best crop, how does it come? It is from the bees that pollinate. The bees that pollinate don't discriminate between my corn and others' corn. They will not say that this person's corn has to be pollinated from his corn only. The side fields will have to be pollinated from their corn. They just cross-pollinate. And therefore, if I have to ensure that my corn is always the best quality, I have to ensure that it's always pollinated with the best quality corn, which means that all the neighboring farms of corn should grow the best quality corn. So you see, when we actually think of the larger good, ultimately we also benefit, simply because we are also part of the whole. When the whole benefits, the part will definitely benefit. But on the other hand, if the part benefits at the cost of the whole, in the ultimate analysis, even the part will get destroyed, because the part cannot survive without the whole.
There's probably just one aspect left from what Swami says, and if you have to talk of that, I always think of this analogy. You know, let's say that you have highways or roadways in our country, and in a democracy or in any modern republic, in that sense, it is a common property. It's a property that belongs to all the people. So it belongs to me whether I'm going to walk on that road, I'm going to cycle on that road, or somebody else is going to come in a fast car, or someone's come in a public transport. That road belongs to everybody. But for us to use that road properly, you know, there is equality, but to express that equality, you have some kind of segregation. They say that, okay, if you're driving in a slow vehicle like a cycle, you take this lane. If you're going in a larger vehicle, then you take this lane. So why do we, I mean, in that sense, I'm actually placing a restriction on myself. I'm placing a restriction on myself with the belief that if I follow this, everybody benefits. Right? So harmony comes in taking on some kind of sacrifice. That's what Swami is saying. That you let go of some of your comforts so that everybody is able to enjoy that. Right? Mm. So now if someone comes and says, this road belongs to me also, so I'm going to set up a shop right in the middle of the road. Right? Even though the road belongs to him, I cannot permit him to do that. Why? Because that is going contrary to the purpose of that road. So only when I know the purpose of the road, I can even think of harmony and equality. And that is why Swami says that you cannot talk about equality and harmony unless and until you feature in the aspect of what is the purpose of human life itself. Wow. And that is why when you talk of harmony, when you're talking about the proper study of mankind, yes, you have to look at mankind's position in creation. You have to look at man's relationship to mankind. But you have to also look at the purpose of mankind, of human birth itself, to completely understand the statement of proper study of mankind as man.
And that is where I think we come to a climax of this theme, because whenever Swami says that man must understand himself, it is beneficial if that understanding is intellectual, if that understanding is based on knowledge. But ultimately, proper understanding of oneself comes from answering the question, who am I? That is what Swami would always say. Find out who you are and all your other questions are answered. That is one question answering which all the questions can be answered. At this point in time, dear listeners, we will play out another little discourse clip from Bhagwan and then conclude the discussion on this theme after that.
There are, I think, two clips that we would like to play. One is, of course, Swami is speaking about the importance of knowing yourself itself. It's just a small padyam. But at the end of it, there's another beautiful clip which Swami kind of harmonizes this whole idea, how you have to first understand yourself, and only after that the unity of thought word indeed can be truly expressed. But this is a very beautiful padyam where Swami says, where, you know, the importance of knowing yourself.
Body is full of the senses, is weak when it is going to fall down.
Though
100 years are stipulated, you cannot go
by that. లేక ప్రాయమందో లేక ముసలియందో లేక ముదిమియందో ఎప్పుడో విడిచేది ఎరుకలేదు.
When you are going to die, you don't know.
మరణమే నిశ్చయము.
Death is certain.
బుద్ధిమంతుడైన దేహమున్నంతలో తాను తెలియవలేదు.
If you are intelligent enough, know yourself.
మానవునికి రెండు ప్రధానమైనటువంటివి, టూ ఆర్ ఇంపార్టెంట్ టు మ్యాన్. ఒకటి గుండె, రెండవది తల.
వన్ ద హార్ట్, ద సెకండ్ హెడ్.
ఈ హెడ్ అనేటువంటిది ప్రాకృతమైనటువంటి విషయాలంతా విచారణ చేస్తూ వస్తుంది.
హెడ్ థింగ్స్ ఆఫ్ సెక్యులర్ వరల్డ్లీ థింగ్స్,
ఇది అవుట్ సైడ్ యొక్క దీనిని ప్రకటింపజేస్తుంది.
ఇట్ ఎక్స్ప్రెసెస్ ఓన్లీ ది ఎక్స్టర్నల్
ఆబ్జెక్ట్ అవుట్లుక్స్.
ఇట్ హాస్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్ అవుట్లుక్స్.
కానీ గుండె సబ్జెక్ట్ అవుట్లుక్స్ ని చూస్తుంది.
ద హార్ట్ టేక్స్ ఇన్ టు కన్సిడరేషన్ సబ్జెక్ట్ అవుట్లుక్స్.
ఆబ్జెక్ట్ అవుట్లుక్స్ ను మాత్రమే ప్రవృత్తి మార్గము అన్నారు.
The object outlooks is called the path of
ee naadu manam prapanchamlo chesetundi vyaparamulu kaani arjinche vidyalu kaani sampadinche dhanamu kaani manavudu ye karmalu aacharinchinappudiki ivanni kudunu pravrutti margamule.
All the business transactions, the education acquired and the money, all that relates to the external.
Ee pravruttiki sambandhinchinatuntive kama krodha lobha moha madamatchadi.
This external nature relates to the desire.
Arishad vargamulato koodinatundi pravrutti.
The pravrutti, the external, is bound by these six.
Kanukane ivi nirantaram kulanu marpu chendutu untayi.
Hence they change continuously.
Ee gunamulato koodinatundide kanuka deham kulanu marpu chendutu untadi.
As the body has got these qualities, it also changes.
Kani hrudayamu eppatiki okatiga untundi.
But the heart stands one only.
Idi nivrutti margamu.
This is inward path.
Deeni yokka gunamulu emiti?
What are the qualities of the inward path?
Satyamu, daya, prema, sahanamu, sanubhuti, tyagamu.
The qualities of the inward path are the truth, compassion, love and sacrifice.
Ilanti manavata gunamulu hrudayam nundi aavirbhavistayi.
Human qualities originate out of the heart.
ఈ ప్రవృత్తికి సంబంధించినటువంటి యొక్క గుణములు తల నుండి ప్రారంభిస్తాయి.
ఆల్ ఎక్స్టర్నల్ అవుట్లుక్ కమ్స్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ ది హెడ్.
కనుక మానవ జీవితం లోపల హార్ట్ అండ్ హెడ్
సో హ్యూమన్ లైఫ్ సెంటర్స్ అరౌండ్ దీస్ టూ.
ఈ రెండింటినీ సమన్వయపరిచేటువంటిది హ్యాండ్.
దీస్ టూ ఆర్ ఇంటిగ్రేటెడ్ బై హ్యాండ్.
ఇదే ది ప్రాపర్ స్టడీ ఆఫ్ మన్కైండ్ ఇస్ మ్యాన్. హార్ట్, హెడ్ అండ్ హ్యాండ్, త్రీ హెచ్.
దిస్ ఈస్ వాట్ ఈస్ సెడ్. The proper study of mankind is man, 3H.
ఈ యొక్క 3H అనేటువంటి యొక్క తత్వాన్ని మానవుడు చక్కగా గుర్తించడానికి ప్రయత్నించాలి.
మ్యాన్ షుడ్ రియలైజ్ ద నేచర్ ఆఫ్ ది 3H.
వావ్, వాట్ అ బ్యూటిఫుల్ కనెక్షన్ అండ్ వాట్ అ క్లైమాక్స్ ఇట్ ఇస్. యు నో, టిల్ నౌ వెన్ వీ స్పీక్ ఆఫ్ హార్మనీ ఇన్ హ్యూమన్స్, హార్మనీ ఇన్ మ్యాన్, వీఆర్ స్పీకింగ్ అబౌట్ ద యూనిటీ ఆఫ్ థాట్, వర్డ్ అండ్ డీడ్. And Swami so seamlessly and so easily integrates harmony of thought, word and deed, which is nothing but unity and purity of thought, word and deed, into the harmony between the head, heart and hand. Swami says that the head is what is related to the external, the heart is what is related to the internal, and these two must be in harmony. And what is the thing that brings harmony between these two? It is the hand that performs action. And therefore Swami connects the unity of thought, word and deed to the unity of the head, heart and hand.
Right. Very beautiful in that sense. You know, I think it really completes it in that sense. Swami was saying the heart, all the qualities which Swami names, I think we've spoken about this before, compassion, sympathy, empathy and all of that is born out of oneness. And all the bad qualities like greed, jealousy, anger, all that is born out of duality.
Hmm.
So Swami saying the heart is always dealing with duality. And
the head.
I'm sorry, the head is always dealing with duality, the heart is always dealing with unity. So the moment you realize that your real nature is that Hridaya, which is the seat for the Atma, then you say that these are all the qualities which I actually have to express. And how do you, and Swami also says that the head is also important, where I think there's another beautiful discourse where Swami speaks about Pravritti and Nivritti. So Swami says, very simple example, Swami says, you know, you take a mango, okay? The mango has external features, it has a smell, it has a taste. So when you talk about Pravritti, you're saying that is the smell good, is the taste good? So Swami says that is also important because you cannot eat a mango which is rotting, right? So the Pravritti aspect is also important. You use the head to ensure that you're eating the right substance. But Swami went on to say that, but when do you stop eating? When do you say that it is too much? And that is where the Nivritti comes, where you say that this is enough. I understand that I've had my fill. So Swami says Pravritti and Nivritti is important. So what the heart does is most important, but what the head does is also important. And how do you harmonize the two? It is through action, or it is through the third H. In fact, Swami would say, in one of the discourses, Swami was talking about education and human values, EHV. Swami said it is not wrong to say EHV is 3HV.
Turn the E around.
Right, turn the E around. EHV and 3HV is the same, Swami would say.
Education and human values is nothing but
the harmonizing of
the three H's.
The three H's, is, right.
The heart, head and hand. Dear listeners, I think that is the ultimate interpretation of the proper study of mankind is man. Because if we say that we have to study man, we have to realize our oneness. And when we say oneness, it's not just as being part of the same biosphere or ecosphere or same planet. It's about the universal oneness, which is denoted by Advaita. And we saw how in different social projects of Bhagwan also, when whatever Swami has done, it is in order to emphasize and highlight this kind of Vishala Bhavam. In fact, possibly we'll conclude with just one more quote. This is what Swami advised his MBA students. You know, Swami, when he started the MBA in 1986, he would regularly visit, and every Thursday, I think, there would be a discourse where Swami would speak on different themes connected to MBA.
Right.
But it's most interesting that Swami said that MBA is actually MMM. Swami said Master of Business Administration is not the right term. The right term is Master of Man Management. And in different levels, Swami has explained the meaning of this. The simplest and grossest, most basal level being, Swami said that if an MBA graduate knows how to manage men, he can get any work done because he need not have any special skill or ability. Men are there who already have that skill and ability. If you only know how to deal with the temperaments and egos and whatever of different men, all your work can get done. And therefore, a manager is one who is a master of man management and not a master of business administration. And for this, you know, I am just reading out an excerpt of a discourse that Swami delivered on the 21st of August 1986 in the Institute Auditorium. Swami said, "The pursuit of money as an end in itself is making people greedy and excessively commercial minded. Many farmers are switching over to money crops, cash crops, to earn more money. This is not the kind of management we should have. We should be concerned with man management. The proper study of mankind is man. Men should learn to be pure in thought, word and deed. This is the highest virtue. We do not want slogan writers and platform orators and yellow journalists. We want leaders who will be persons of integrity and character. The aim of management institutes should be to produce such leaders. Their courses should be based on Indian culture and values. So that also briefly explains the difference between an MBA from Swami's University versus an MBA anywhere else, because definitely, you know, having gone through the course myself, I can vouch and say that it is not so much about business administration as much as it is about man management, and man management begins with oneself. It's not about managing other men. I can't manage other men if I can't manage myself, and therefore it begins with self-discovery, and the ultimate form of self-discovery is finding the answer to the question, who am I?
And I think all of this is summarized in what Swami would often speak about, you know, the Vyashti.
To Parameshti. Vyashti, yeah, Samashti,
Srishti, and Parameshti. I think that is what it is. You know, you study man as a part of society. You study society. You recognize society to be a part of creation or Srishti. When you create that, you understand that all of this is part of Parameshti, and when you finally inquire into who is really man, that's what we started off with. So Swami was saying the proper study of mankind is man means what is worthy of study for mankind. That is the essence of that statement. And the answer to that is man is worthy of study. And when we say man, the individual has to be studied. So that's what Swami would often say, that we go around asking everybody around, who are you, what you need to ask is, who am I? Swami would say that is the question you start your life with. When you are born as a child, the child starts by asking koham. The crying of the child is akin to the child asking koham, or what it means is, who am I? Swami would say, if you do not find an answer to that, you'll come again and ask, who am I? You'll again come and ask, who am I? But you lose that pursuit in the course of your life, and you start asking who are you, who are others around, what is this life. You explore everything else, but you stop exploration of this fundamental question that you start your life with. So then you keep coming back asking that question again and again till you find an answer to that. So what is it that mankind has to preoccupy itself in the sense of study? And it is the study of oneself that one has to preoccupy oneself with.
Praying to Swami that we keep crying like the newborns to find out our true identity, and praying that we never stop crying and trying till we achieve that identity, we will conclude this satsang. We hope that it was enjoyable and enlightening for you as it was for us. We pray to Swami to forgive our lapses in understanding and any transgressions that we would have made. We offer this humbly at His lotus feet. And we conclude with a song, on the other side of which, as always, you'll be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
साई का ही साथ है।
హితం ఏవాం మీరందరూ క్షేమంగా ఉండాలి.
Let everybody be happy, safe and secure.
ఆనందంగా ఉంటుండాలి.
Let everyone be happy.
ఇట్టి సర్వశక్తిమయమైనటువంటి యొక్క ఆత్మతత్వము ప్రతి మానవుని యందు కూడాను సూక్ష్మ రూపంలో నిలిచి ఉంటున్నది.
This all powerful ఆత్మ resides in human, every human being.
సేవ అనేటువంటిది మొట్టమొదట అహంకారాన్ని చంపివేస్తుంది.
Service first of all kills this ego.
నీవెవరు అని ప్రశ్నించినప్పుడు నేను ఆత్మను అని చెప్పాలి.
ఇఫ్ ఎనీవన్ పుట్స్ దిస్ క్వశ్చన్ హూ ఆర్ యూ, యూ షుడ్ సే ఐ యామ్ ఆత్మ.
డియర్ లిసనర్స్, రేడియో సై డెలివర్స్ అ డైలీ డోస్ ఆఫ్ ఫోర్ డివైన్ డిస్కోర్సెస్. on Radio Size Asia stream. The first discourse is at 6:30 a.m. in the morning and the second at 11:30 a.m. Indian Standard Time. You can listen to the third divine discourse of the day at 2:30 p.m. in the afternoon and the fourth at 10:30 p.m. These timings are on Asia stream. To know about the timings of divine discourses of Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page of our website radiosai.org. You can also listen to these discourses at your leisure at any time by downloading from our website. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
You are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.